लोकास्त्रयो ह्यानु विभ्राजन्त एते यन्नाब्रजान् जन्तुषु ये ननुग्रहा व्रजन्ति भद्राणि चरन्ति ये निशाम्. The effulgent Vaikuntha planets, by whose illumination alone all the illuminating planets within this material world give off reflected light, cannot be reached by those who are not merciful to other living entities. Only persons who constantly engage in welfare activities for other living entities can reach the Vaikuntha planets. I would like to welcome everyone this evening to this beautiful setting where we have come together to discuss the transcendental wisdom of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada explains that to live in the forest is the mode of goodness. To live in the city is the mode of passion. To live in those places where there is illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, such as the brothel, the permit room, the slaughterhouse, that place is in the mode of ignorance. But the temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where devotees gather together to hear the glories of the Lord and to chant the holy names of the Lord, that place is Vaikuntha. It is above and beyond the modes of material nature. And what we associate with, we naturally take on those qualities. Where we go, we become like that place, because we are so easily influenced by our environment. The consciousness of every living entity is very much becomes what it associates with. So this evening, we have all attained the abode of Vaikuntha, this beautiful garden with nice trees, sky illuminated by stars, humble and sincere devotees all around, anxious to hear about the Lord, anxious to chant his names. This atmosphere is the spiritual world. And it is explained in this particular verse that one can only realize the transcendental abode of the Lord if one is constantly engaged in welfare activities for other living entities. In other words, as long as we have selfish motivations, we cannot be elevated to the spiritual world. And even if we're in a place that is the spiritual world, we cannot genuinely appreciate it. Therefore, this selfless desire to serve others for their real welfare is the true principle of dharma. But we must understand what is actually for the welfare of others. What is being described in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is not material philanthropy, altruism, or mundane charity. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, from the very beginning, kicks out anything subordinate to the principle of pure unalloyed devotion. Real welfare to others is welfare to another's soul. That we are not these bodies. These bodies are just temporary shells, like a set of clothes that we inhabit for a very, very insignificant portion of time. And then we must cast these bodies away. That is called death. Real welfare is genuine concern for the needs of the soul, to help the soul come closer to God, and thus relieve the soul from the inevitable sufferings of material misery. And this beautiful story that accompanies this verse is very instructive to understand the true welfare of others and how to achieve perfection in our life. The verse we are reading is explaining the great devotee Dhruva Maharaj, his journey back to the spiritual world. Vidura is explaining, Maitreya Muni is explaining to Vidura this beautiful story in Srimad Bhagavatam. In brief summary, we know that Dhruva Maharaj was the son of Maharaj Uttanapada. His grandfather was Swayambhuva Manu, and his great-grandfather was Lord Brahma, who is the king of this material universe. One day, Dhruva Maharaj was coming to climb on his father's lap while his father was sitting on the royal throne in the palace. Dhruva Maharaj's stepbrother, Uttama, who was the son of the queen Suruchi, was already sitting on his father's legs. As Dhruva Maharaj, only 5 years old, in such innocence as a natural child loves his father, was climbing upon the father's lap, the stepmother Suruchi was outraged. She was an envious woman, and she could not tolerate her son having anyone equal to him. This is the nature of material attachment. Janasya mohoyamaham mameti. Not only we are attached to our own concentrated selfish interests, but also we are very much attached to the selfish interests of those who have relationship to us. We cannot tolerate someone being equal to or better than us, and we cannot tolerate anyone being equal to or better than our husband or our wife, or especially our children, or our mothers or our fathers. This is all a type of material illusion. So Suruchi said in a very harsh voice that you have no right to be on the throne with your father, because you were born of a woman who is inferior than me. If you want to ever sit on your father's throne, you have to do great penances and austerities to please the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and by his grace, you must be born in my womb. Then only will you be fit. When Dhruva Maharaj heard this, he was stunned. His heart was aggrieved. He began breathing like a serpent that had just been stepped upon. And he looked at his father. Can I come to sit with you? And the father was so much afraid of displeasing his favorite wife that he said nothing. So Dhruva Maharaj ran to his mother, and he was weeping, crying, trembling. And when his mother saw him in that condition, she did not know what to do. Her child was trembling in such grieving condition, he couldn't even speak. and the people around, her servants, who had witnessed what had happened, they explained. And just as Dhruva Maharaj was weeping, his beautiful mother, Suniti, her face, which was like a lotus flower, shriveled like a lotus in the heat of the sun. And she began to cry. And she explained to her son that actually, you should never ever think badly of others. You should never be envious of others or try to get revenge on others. Because if you do, you will have to suffer the consequences. You must tolerate this. But unfortunately, what your mother said is true. Your father does not like me. He likes his other wife more. So you are unfortunate that you have taken birth from the womb of an unfortunate woman. Dhruva Maharaj did not know what to do. He was in so much distress. And thus his mother, being a real mother who knows how to love her child, began to instruct. The purpose of life is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. If you worship him in devotion and please him, he can bestow upon you the fulfillment of all of your desires. Not only the desires for things of this world, but he can fulfill the desire of liberation in the spiritual world. So therefore, you should dedicate your life to worshiping the Lord. It is said in the scriptures that one has no right to be a mother, a father, unless one can somehow or other, by their example and by their words, induce their child to surrender to God and never take birth in this material world again. Nowhere in the scriptures does it say that the responsibility of mother and father is to give the child good education, lots of money, nice place to stay, good marriage, and all of these things. This is karma kanda. These are subordinate, materialistic obligations. But the true responsibility is to teach your child to become a pure, unalloyed devotee of God, and thus be free from all the miseries of birth and death, and attain the bliss of the spiritual world. So Suniti was a mother who actually knew how to love her child, and she gave him this instruction. And Dhruva Maharaj accepted those instructions, and he asked where to find this Lord. The great sages, they go to the forest, I have heard like this. So Dhruva Maharaj, a 5-year-old boy, left the comforts of the palace, unaccompanied, deep into the jungles. And the Supreme Lord is in everyone's heart. And it is said, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridaya shirjana tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutanam yantra rudani mayaya. Krishna is directing the wanderings of everyone. If one has a sincere desire to know Krishna, Krishna will miraculously make the arrangements by which you will connect with those devotees who will bring you to the spiritual path. Do not think that coming into the society of genuine devotees has happened by accidents, or that there is a material cause. Somehow or other, either in this life or in previous lives, we must have had some desire for devotion to God. Or we must have knowingly or unknowingly performed service to a great devotee of the Lord. That is called agyata sukriti. And in reciprocation, the Lord will give us the opportunity to associate with his devotees and learn the process of purifying our hearts. So this is what had taken place in the lives of everyone that is here tonight. How you receive that mercy of the Lord is what determines whether you accept your good fortune or reject it. But we have received the ultimate fortune. The path, mahat sevam dwaram ahuravam uktes tamodvaram yoshitam yoshitam. That when we associate with great souls, the doors to liberation are open. And when we associate with worldly people, the doors to the lower conditions of suffering are opened wide. So as Dhruva was alone in the forest, at that time Narada Muni came. And first Narada Muni tested him. He said, "You are just a small child. You should not be so concerned that someone has offended you. You go home and play with your friends. And when you get older, then you can come to the forest to do bhakti." But Dhruva Maharaj explains that my heart has been hurt, and therefore I cannot hear your words. You give me another instruction. I have come here to search for Krishna. You please teach me how I can attain Krishna. When Narada Muni saw that Dhruva Maharaj was actually serious about spiritual life, then he imparted transcendental knowledge. We find also in Bhagavad Gita, until Arjuna was actually in a condition of suffering, tears coming from his eyes, bow falling from his hand, complexion turning pale, mouth turning dry, limbs trembling, hair standing on end, begging Krishna, "Please instruct me. Tell me, what is my duty? What is my purpose?" Then Krishna spoke. Because unless one is very serious, unless one understands that the message of transcendental knowledge is an urgent necessity of life, even if you hear it, you don't really hear it. Dhruva Maharaj suffered terribly, but that suffering was the greatest benediction, because through that suffering he had such an earnest, determined desire to know God. So we should see the sufferings of this world that come into our life as actually an impetus for higher consciousness. If we take our sufferings to be something ordinary, then the result is something ordinary. We just go through our suffering. Somehow or other it begins, and then somehow or other it ends, and then it begins again, then it ends again. Material existence, these dualities, there's pleasure and pain, suffering and relief. It is always coming and going. But one who has sensitivity toward the higher realms of truth understands that everything in this world has a purpose. Nothing happens by chance. The fact is, any suffering we are enduring is coming as the results of our own previous bad karma. And anything we are enjoying is actually the results of our past good karma. But which is better? It's a matter of how you look at it. A wealthy man likes to see more money coming in and not much money going out. Correct? So whenever you're happy in this world, you should know that you're exhausting all your pious activities of the past. It's all going away. It's you're just withdrawing all your good past credits. So is happiness good? You're losing all your good karma of the past. And when you're suffering, you're losing all your bad karmas of the past. So which is better? To lose your bad karma or to lose your good karma? So why we're so anxious to be happy and so much avoiding suffering? Because it is the nature of the soul to be happy. So a devotee is not concerned with good karma or bad karma. A devotee wants to transcend karma through acts of devotion. Good acts bring good karma, bad acts bring bad karma. Devotion to God brings eternal bliss, elevation to the spiritual world. So the sufferings and the enjoyments we get, we have to see the spiritual purpose behind it. We have to seize the opportunity that comes with it for spiritual realization. And that is called intelligence. Intelligence doesn't mean going to school and memorizing all sorts of data and getting a good grade on your exam. That is material education. But intelligence means to discriminate how to seize every moment of our life to elevate our consciousness, to elevate our status of life to a higher position. So Dhruva Maharaj, his suffering was a benediction. He was suffering so bad, he could not hear anything good about this world. Narada was saying, just go back and play like you used to. Don't worry about it. He said, I can't. I cannot do it. My heart is too shook up. I have to know God. And that was Arjuna's position. We must hear the word of God with a sense of urgency and a sense of determination. Because the message of Godhead is transcendental and it can elevate us to the blissful state of transcendental consciousness. But who we hear from and what our particular state of receptivity is what determines what benefit we gain. So Narada saw that Dhruva was a very, very serious disciple. So he explained to him that you should go to a holy place. Go to Vrindavan. There is a forest called Madhuban, and there is the beautiful river Jamuna. Take 3 baths a day in Jamuna. Make a beautiful form of the deity and worship that deity with flowers, with prayers, with obeisances, with songs. Sit and meditate on the beautiful form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Narada explained, he has a beautiful bluish complexion. His eyes are like lotuses. He has 4 arms carrying the conch shell, the disc, the lotus flower, and the club. He has a wonderful yellow garment which shines like lightning. He has a beautiful helmet and wonderful jewels and lovely garland. Meditate on this beautiful form of the Lord and within the core of your heart. And this was in the age of Satyayuga. He taught him the process of controlling the breath by which to help him to meditate on the supreme form of the Lord. And he said, but most important is you always chant this mantra I am about to give you. Constantly meditate on this mantra of the holy name of the Lord. And he gave him the particular Maha Mantra for Satya Yuga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Dhruva Maharaj went to the forest, and he was so sincere and determined to somehow or other realize God. His ambition at that time was, if I see God, then I will ask him for a benediction of having a kingdom greater than my father, Uttanapada, greater than my grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu, who is the king of the earth, and greater than Lord Brahma, who is the king of the universe. When you go to a big man, you ask for big things. So he was going to the biggest. So for the first month, Dhruva Maharaj every 3 days he ate some berries and fruits that fell from the trees. Constantly chanting the holy names and worshiping the deity. The second month, every 6 days, he would just eat the dry leaves and grass that were on the ground. The third month, every 9 days, he just drank a little water. And the fourth month, every 12 days, he took one breath. And after that, he stopped breathing. And by the end of 6 months, he was so deeply absorbed in the beautiful form of the Lord within his heart in meditating on this mantra that he not only controlled his own breath and stopped it, but his power is he stopped all the breath of the air of the universe. And because the Lord was so much manifesting himself in his heart, Dhruva Maharaj became so heavy that his toes started pushing down the earth. This is the power of the process of yoga. Of course, in this age of Kali Yuga, who can do that? Who can stop breathing completely in immersed in the meditation on the Lord without your mind even flickering for a second to any other thought? By the grace of Narada Muni, Dhruva Maharaj was able to do that. But in the age of Kali Yuga, if you try to do that, you will die. So better you follow the Yuga Dharma of this age, which is to have nice prasad, to dance in ecstasy and to chant the holy names. Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki. That same Narada Muni who instructed Dhruva comes in Satya Yuga as Srivas Thakur. And in his house, he, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, Gadadhar, Advaita, Haridas, and all the devotees would perform the most wonderful kirtans, chanting and dancing, thus showing the means by which we can attain the same perfection of Dhruva Maharaj by the sublime and joyful process of Harinam Sankirtan. So the demigods, they couldn't breathe. They didn't know what was happening. And the demigods, when they are in trouble, they turn to Krishna. Krishna explains, why should you worship the demigods? The demigods worship him. When people are in need for material benefits, they go to the demigods, but when the demigods are in need, they go to the Lord. So they all approached him and said, we are all suffocating. Please save us. And Lord Narayan simply smiled and said, oh, this is my little devotee, Dhruva Maharaj. He's doing his bhakti. I will deal with him. So on his bird carrier, Garuda, he descended to Madhuban on bank of Jamuna. And Dhruva was standing on one foot, meditating on the Lord and on the holy mantra. Maha Mantra. And at that time, the Lord disappeared from his meditation within his heart. And Dhruva Maharaj became very afraid. Where is he? Where is he? And then he opened his eyes. And when he opened his eyes, that same object of meditation was standing right before him. And Dhruva Maharaj was very happy and surprised, and he immediately offered his dandavat, pranams, obeisances. And then he got up, and when he saw the beauty and the majesty of the Supreme Godhead, he was speechless. Plus, he was only 5 to 6 years old, so he never had much of an education of studying Vedas. He was simply a bhakti, a bhakta, carrying out the orders of his Guru Maharaj. And by doing so, he got the mercy of the Lord. So the Lord placed his conch shell on Dhruva's head. And by doing so, he imparted within Dhruva's heart knowledge of all the Vedas, with the capacity to glorify with choice poetry the absolute truth. And thus Dhruva Maharaj began to pray. First, he glorified the Lord as being the supreme and only savior of all living beings, the only friend who can give us shelter from the sufferings of this world. A real friend is one who can help us when we are in the greatest need. And at the time of death, we're in the greatest need. Only Krishna can help us then. So he is our only true friend. And anyone who tries to connect us to Krishna, he is also equally our true friend, in the true sense of friendship and love. Then Dhruva Maharaj began to condemn himself, that I am so foolish. I came to you to ask for materialistic things. Such an embarrassment. I came to ask for a kingdom better than my father, grandfather, or great-grandfather. Abramabhuvanaloka punaravartanorjana mamupetyatu konteya punarajanmana vidyate. That from the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, they are all places of death. They are all places of misery. Dhruva Maharaj explained that I was looking for broken pieces of glass in the form of material acquisition of money, power, recognition, and fame. But I have achieved by your mercy the rare diamond of your darshan. Therefore, I have no desire for any kingdom. I am simply satisfied to remember you and to serve you. But the Lord always wants to use his devotees as an example for other people to follow. So the Lord told him. He told him his future. He said, you should go back to your father and you should become king. And you should rule the world in a spirit of devotion. And you should get married and have a family and children. And teach the world how to be a grihasta in devotion to God. And in this life, you will achieve the fulfillment of all the ecstasies of the treasures of love of God. And when departing this body, you will go to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha. In fact, he told him, there is a Vaikuntha planet in this material world where Lord Vishnu resides. And you will attain that Vaikuntha planet, which is never devastated within this world. And at the end of the universe, you will come back to my world. In this way, he actually achieved what neither his father, grandfather, or great-grandfather achieved. Brahma was still living in Brahmaloka. Swayambhuvamanu still had his heavenly abode. His father was still in the palace. Meanwhile, Narada Muni had gone back to the palace of Maharaj Uttanapada, who was in terrible distress. He said, just see attachment to my wife, what it has done to me. Because of my attachment to her, I neglected my own son. And I broke his heart. And he has run away into the forest where there are jackals and wolves and lions and thieves. When one becomes too excessively attached to the objects of the senses, one naturally becomes offensive and loses one's intelligence. But Narada Muni told the king that your son has seen Vishnu. He is now a perfectly illustrious, self-realized soul, and he is soon coming back to your kingdom. So Maharaj Uttanapada made a big, beautiful festival. He decorated everything in the kingdom to welcome Dhruva back. And after a short time, he placed Dhruva as the king of the world. And Dhruva Maharaj ruled the kingdom in such devotion to God. He kept his palace. He married two wives. One was Ila, one was Brahmi. And these two wives, he had children. And he maintained the status quo of a king only for the service of the Lord and his citizens. But he was never greedy. Whatever he did was for the benefit and welfare of others. Actually, it is explained that Dhruva Maharaj, whatever came into his treasury, he would just empty it out and give it in charity to others to elevate them in spiritual consciousness. In this way, he was an example of what a grihastha should be. Always very charitable. Charity is one of the most important principles for grihastha ashram. Because the tendency of the false ego is to want to be the proprietor and the enjoyer. And to get as much as you can, thinking, this is mine, more, 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 more. And as you have more wife, children, you feel it's a necessity to accumulate more and more and more and more for yourself. And in this way, the perpetuation that this is my body, these family members are my family members, and this property is mine, becomes greater and greater. But the goal of life is to understand that I am part and parcel of God. Everything belongs to God. Therefore, to neutralize the natural tendency to completely intertwine your whole consciousness in the bondage of thinking I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer, it is very necessary to give substantially in charity. That actually I am the servant, that my life is not simply for me, it is for the welfare of others. Even if it hurts, this is what the Shastra says, you must give. Not only for the benefit of the people you give to, but mostly for the benefit of yourself. But Bhagavad Gita explains there is charity in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Charity in the mode of ignorance is to give the wrong thing to the wrong person in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong with the wrong consciousness. Hare Krishna. And charity in the mode of passion is not much better. It's giving in charity, but the idea is what I expect to get in return from it. I will give, but I will become famous as the bestower of opulences to others. Charity in the mode of goodness is to give the right thing to the right person at the right time, in the right place, with the right consciousness. It's very rare. Because we don't even know who we're giving to in these days. And by charity in the mode of goodness, you get good karma. By charity in the mode of ignorance, whatever you give to that person, if he uses it for illicit things, you're responsible karmically. You give charity to someone, he goes to buy beedies, you're part of the conspiracy of beedy smoking. The person goes to take the money, goes to prostitute or alcohol, or something like that, you're partially responsible. You're facilitating. But charity, which is for the purpose of elevating a person's soul, is transcendental. That charity will bring you closer to God. Therefore, if you must give food, give Krishna's prasad. Krishna's prasad, whoever you give it to, it's the right thing to the right person at the right time, at the right place, with the right motive. Because it's prasad. It benefits all. Charity of giving transcendental knowledge. You can comfort a person's body, that is good, but give them some connection to God with it. That is the highest charity. And the supreme charity is to help broadcast the Lord's most merciful manifestation that can deliver all living beings through the chanting of the holy name. Dhruva Maharaj lived in this way as king for 36,000 years. In Satya Yuga, people lived 100,000 years. In Treta Yuga, people lived 10,000 years. In Dwapara Yuga, people live 1,000 years. In Kali Yuga, at the beginning, people were living up to 100 years. Now, people hardly can reach 100 years. And as Kali Yuga progresses, the lifespan becomes shorter, the piety becomes less, spirituality becomes less. So living like this, one time toward the end of his reign, Dhruva Maharaj, his brother, went to the Himalayas and he was killed by some yakshas. And the mother of Uttama, Suruchi, she became so aggrieved that she went into the forest and just entered into fire. And they both disappeared. But Dhruva Maharaj's king understood that he must uphold justice. The yakshas killed his brother, the yakshas must pay. So he went on his chariot and went to the city of the yakshas in the northern area of Himalayas, and he blew his conch shell. And hundreds and thousands of yakshas came out to attack him, and they began to fight. And it was a wonderful fight. The Bhagavatam explains great details. At one time, each yaksha, I think there was 130,000 yakshas, they were all shot arrows at Dhruva, each one shot six. And he was completely covered by a cloud of arrows. And everyone was thinking, he is finished. But Krishna always protects his devotee. Somehow or other he came out like the sun comes from behind a dark cloud. And he started shooting his arrows at the yakshas. And whoever survived ran away. And then the yakshas decided to use their mystic potencies to somehow or other defeat Dhruva. So by chanting demoniac mantras, all of a sudden, clouds went in the sky. And then Dhruva heard the ocean coming. He was in the Himalayas. Then there was a big tidal wave. The whole ocean was coming to fall on him. And then rain started. It started raining blood and pus and urine and stool and bones and flesh and bodies and heads and tridents and swords and fire. And serpents started falling from the clouds with fire coming out of their mouths and wicked eyes. And in this way, it was a terrible scene. And Dhruva Maharaj, seeing all this around him, hurricanes and volcanoes, everything was just coming at him. He became bewildered. He was thinking, what am I supposed to do now? And he just stood there. But the devotees, The devotees were standing there, and they told him, Dhruva Maharaj, you're a pure devotee, so you should chant the holy names of the Lord. Because if you chant the holy names of the Lord with faith, it will dispel all the illusions. So Dhruva Maharaj began to chant the holy names. And immediately his whole consciousness became clear. And he took one Narayan Astra and put it to his bow, and all the illusions disappeared. This is very important. However advanced we may be, the modes of material nature are very powerful. We must have the association of devotees. In the association of devotees, whatever may come upon us, they will always remind us. Just like in the temple, when you're chanting japa, sometimes you fall asleep. What does that mean, you fall asleep? It means the modes of material nature are covering over you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And if you're at home, but if you're in the temple, or if you're chanting with your family members at home, that's also good. Someone will say, Prabhu, wake up. Usually we say, I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't sleeping. I was just absorbed in meditation on the holy. But in any way, whatever you say, they woke you up. So the purpose was fulfilled. And sometimes, what happens in this world? Sometimes in your business you become so overwhelmed with all kinds of difficulties and troubles, and you just become bewildered what to do. Or sometimes disasters happen. Or sometimes the modes of nature create envy or lust or anger or pride or illusion in your mind. And however great or small we are, we must have devotees there to tell us, Prabhu, chant the holy names, to help us come out of that situation. Bharat Maharaj was on the level of bhava, but still he became bewildered by becoming attached to a little deer and left all his spiritual practices and had to take his next birth as a deer. Why? Even though he was so advanced, he was alone. If he had if there were other devotees with him, when he was attached to the deer, someone would have said, Prabhu, you're becoming too attached to this deer. Wake up. This is not good. Give it some prasad, but don't be so attached. And he would have gone back to Godhead. So we must have the association of devotees. Because devotees are always reconnecting our consciousness and reminding us that Krishna is none different than his name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So Dhruva Maharaj, as a Vaishnav Kshatriya, he was fighting very hard. And he was just destroying the yakshas. And then Swayambhuva Manu came down, his grandfather, and said, my boy Dhruva, you have already, your brother's dead, and one yaksha killed him, and he's already punished. Why are you killing all these other yakshas? What have they done to you? A devotee should be non-violent, should be forgiving, should be compassionate to all living beings. Dhruva Maharaj said, yes. He became somehow or other so absorbed in his duty. But Swayambhuva Manu reminded him. At that time, a very important part of our history took place. The Lord of the Yakshas, Kuvera, descended. And he said to Dhruva, that I want to thank you for sparing the yakshas. You are such a great devotee of the Lord. I want to give you any benediction you desire. Now, Kuvera is called the King of Kings. Why? Because he's the treasurer of the demigods. All the wealth of the demigods is being dispatched by Kuvera. And if someone wants to be a king, they have to get the power of the wealth from Kuvera, from his benediction. So he's the king over all kings within this material universe. So Kuvera told Dhruva, I will give you anything you want. Dhruva could have asked for anything. Dhruva said that only one thing I want, that I have complete faith in the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that I always remember him under any circumstance in life. That is the only benediction I desire. And that I always be the servant of the servant of his servants. Through this episode, Dhruva Maharaj revealed to us what is the greatest wealth in existence. Prabodhananda Saraswati, he wrote a beautiful poem in which he explains, I do not want elevation to all the wealth and luxuries of the heavenly planets, because they are like will-o'-the-wisp. They are here today and tomorrow gone. They are illusory. And I do not want even the mystic powers of the yogis who strive so hard to control their senses. Because when you take to bhakti, the senses that are like venomous serpents, the path of bhakti breaks their teeth. So those serpents are harmless. And I do not even want liberation, mukti, into the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, because such an existence is worse than hell. Because in the state of impersonal mukti, there is no chance to serve the Lord, to show your love for the Lord. Because in order for there to be service, in order for there to be bhakti, there has to be three things. There has to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is served. There has to be the mood of offering our activities to him to please him. And that is called service. And there has to be the humble devotee who is making that offering. And he is the servant. So to understand ourselves as eternally part and parcel, eternally the servant of the Lord, is the only means by which we can practice real bhakti. And that state of consciousness is the ultimate realization. And this is what Dhruva Maharaj asked for. Let me always remember you. In this age of Kali Yuga, the Lord has made remembering him very simple. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar, he has descended in his name. And simply by invoking the Lord, by the chanting of his holy name, we can always remember him and never forget him. Kuvera was so impressed and so happy that Dhruva had such transcendental intelligence that he granted him this benediction, and then he left. Later on, Dhruva Maharaj retired from being king and coronated his own son, and then he went to Badrik Ashram, where he simply engaged in serving the Lord in pure unalloyed devotion. And when it was time, a beautiful, beautiful airplane from Vaikuntha came to Badrikashram. And there were two beautiful personalities who had the same forms as Vishnu himself. They were his servants, Nanda and Sunanda. And they came to Dhruva Maharaj. And when Dhruva Maharaj saw these beautiful, illustrious souls with four arms and beautiful blue complexions, he understood that they were messengers of God, the same God he saw at Madhuban. And he bowed with folded hands. He was so surprised. He was so startled that they just came. He didn't know how to receive him. He didn't know what rituals to perform to greet the servants of Vaikuntha. So with folded hands, he simply chanted the holy names. Because in any situation, whatever it may be, chanting the holy names is sufficient. Because all the rituals, all the ceremonies, all the sacrifices, in all the Vedas, for all purposes, are all fulfilled when we sincerely and humbly chant the Maha Mantra. So the servants of Lord Narayan told Dhruva Maharaj that you have perfected your life through pure unalloyed devotion. From the age of 5, you surrendered yourself to the Supreme Lord. And throughout your life as a grihastha, you have been performing your duties in pure devotion. And you have brought such happiness to others. Therefore, on this day, we are going to take you to the spiritual planet. And actually, even though Dhruva Maharaj gave up his ambition to have a greater destination than his father, grandfather, or great-grandfather, the Lord gave it to him anyway by taking him to Vaikuntha. He was the first member of his family to go back to Godhead. And just as Dhruva Maharaj was about to board the plane, he was given his original spiritual body. His body just became resplendent like gold. And then, at that moment, death personified came before Dhruva. Death personified is the person we all have to meet sooner or later. For most people in this world who still have attachments to the body, mind, and senses and the extensions of the body, mind, and senses, death personified is a very fearful form that comes to control us, to be the Lord, to take us from one place and force us into another place. But because Dhruva Maharaj had surrendered to Krishna, death personified came and prostrated, bowed down to Dhruva Maharaj, because he was a devotee of God. And death personified's head became the step that Dhruva Maharaj put his foot on while boarding the Vaikuntha airplane. Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, uses the example that death is actually God himself. Krishna says in Gita, I am death personified. And the example is given that when a mother cat holds the rat in her mouth, the rat sees the cat as the most terrible, gruesome, fearful form of death. Of course, in Bombay, the rats are so big, I think they hold the cats. It's true. At one time at our temple, there was some rats, big rats. And we don't like to kill the rats because We're supposed to be kind to all living beings. But cats are supposed to kill rats. That is their swadharma. So they incur no sin. So we got a nice rat-killing cat. And we put them in the grain storage room. Anyways, the next morning we went to see how many rats the cat caught. We couldn't find the cat. We were looking everywhere for the cat. And then we found the cat hiding in a corner. And it was trembling like this. Scared to death when it saw, you know, it was thinking, oh, I'll kill these cats. But when it saw the cats, the rats, just... But anyways, that's Bombay. But in a normal place, cats kill rats. So when the rat is in the mouth of the cat, the rat sees the cat as the most disturbing, terrible form of death. But the kitten in the mouth of the same cat, the kitten looks at the mother and thinks, oh, this is the object of my love and protection. So similarly, for a devotee who has surrendered to God, he sees death just as Krishna coming to lovingly pick him up and bring him back home, back to God. But for a materialistic person, death is like the rat in the jaws of the cat. Krishna reveals himself as we surrender to him. So Dhruva Maharaj put his foot on the head of death personified because he was a devotee of the Lord who had all the power and glory of God behind him. And the next part of the story is very, very essential for all of you to listen to very carefully. Dhruva Maharaj got on the airplane, but in his heart, he felt very sad. He was thinking, what about my mother, Suniti? It is because of her that I took to the spiritual path. How can I go back to Godhead without her? She should also come. It's only by her mercy that I am a devotee. She was his guru. Narada Muni was his Diksha Guru, but he wasn't worried about Narada Muni. He knew Narada Muni as a transcendentally self-realized pure soul, always with Krishna. But he was actually worried about his mother. He didn't want to go to Vaikuntha if his mother couldn't also come. He didn't say anything, but he was thinking like this. And at that time, Nanda and Sunanda, the servants of the Lord, they told Dhruva, you look there. She's already on her way to Vaikuntha. Because of your love and devotion to the Supreme Lord, the Lord knows your desire, and he is taking her back to Godhead along with you. This is the perfection of being a mother. If you lead your child to the spiritual path and they purify their lives, naturally the child will be so indebted to you for encouraging them in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti. They will feel indebted to you. And when the Lord is going to take them, the Lord will take you along with them. Give you special mercy. The same is the story of Prahlad Maharaj. His father was a demon, but because Prahlad was such a great devotee, he prayed, please, I don't want any benediction from you, my Lord, but if you ask for something, Let me always be the servant of your servants and always remember you. And also, give my father liberation. And Srila Prabhupada, out of his great humility, explains that if the spiritual master somehow guides his disciple to become a pure devotee, even if the spiritual master is not so pure, because of how he has helped his disciple, the disciple will pray for the benefit of the guru, and the guru will go back to Godhead by the grace of the disciple. And Srila Prabhupada, out of his intensely supreme humility, he is praying, I pray that I have one disciple even that becomes a pure devotee, so that by his prayer I could also go back to Krishna. That is the natural humility of the greatest of the saints. So we should understand that for your own self-interest, if you encourage your child to get a PhD and get a good job and have all kinds of nice opulences, at the time of death, neither of you will know where you're going. And death could come at any moment, and it's coming. It's on its way. Courier. By courier, death is coming. And when you meet the couriers, you will not be so happy unless you become very surrendered to the Lord. But if you encourage your child on the path of bhakti, encourage him in the service of Guru and Krishna, then you will get the greatest benediction. Your child will get the greatest benediction. Your whole family will get the greatest benediction. And then Dhruva Maharaj was very happy. Yes, Mataji has gone back to Godhead. And then as he was going up, he saw all the planets and all the demigods were showering flowers upon him. And Narada Muni began to explain the glories of Dhruva Maharaj. And in this way, Dhruva Maharaj perfected his life and entered into the spiritual world as the eternal loving servant of the Lord. And one who hears this wonderful story with faith, deeply trying to understand the qualities of this great devotee and the lessons to be learned, will certainly attain pure unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and perfect his life, her life. Thank you very much. At this time, we would like to invite all of you to participate in the wonderful kirtan of the holy name. As I am chanting, please everyone with folded hands, everyone fold your hands just now. Everyone fold your hands, please, in great humility and reverence. Welcome Krishna's holy name through your ears into your heart. Folding hands means pranam. It is a gesture of welcoming. Namaste actually means I bow down to you. This is the culture of India, a culture of humility. You welcome someone by bowing down to them. So let us bow down with great reverence and humility as the holy name enters into our heart and listen very attentively. And as you are chanting, raise your arms very high, which is the asana, the gesture of surrendering yourself in reaching out for the mercy of the Lord who has so kindly descended in his holy names. Everyone please stand up and chant very loudly.